having all kinds of fun here on a Tuesday, and it's time for us to go back to the hotline right now. We bring in a gentleman who has had an incredibly successful career as an author, as a musician. Many of you know the name, and many of you are probably headed out to see him at the Lorraine Palace Theater. He will be there January the 26th. John Ford Coley joining us on the hotline right now. Thank you very much for joining us, John. How are you?
I'm great, man. How are you guys doing?
Well, so far, so good. Hopefully you're ready for what could be a brisk weekend when you arrive a week from this coming weekend. Right now, we've got temperatures that have been hovering in the 20s. Could see a little bit of snowfall as well, but I'm sure that's nothing you haven't endured before, right?
Oh, man, come on, 20. That's warm. That's balmy down here. Come on. You know, we're sweating. I'll get up there and I'll probably be sweating looking for a big fan.
All right, fair enough. Sweating looking for a big fan in January. If that's the case, things have got to be going extraordinarily well. Well, John, you've been performing for a very, very long time now, and you've got an incredible history. You shared the stage with some of the all-time greats in the music industry and beyond, and sharing the stage with some of those larger-than-life personalities. What are some of your fondest memories as you look back in time?
You know, I wrote a book a couple of years ago called Backstage Pass. Talks about a lot of the people that we played with. We got to be with so many groups. Chicago, we opened for Elton John. He took us to England with him for a month. We played over there in like 1971. Red, those guys, we toured with them all the time. Three Dog Night, we were with them. Seals and Crofts, Carole King. I mean, the list just went on and on, and the people always treated us so good. And that was the great thing about it, is that we didn't really run into any kind of jerks that you hear about. They were all just really good people.
What was it like touring over in England with Elton John? I mean, because I think we all sit here and we think about what an experience that might be, and we've seen the Hollywood fairy tales about a fictitious take on that type of experience, but you actually lived it. What was that like?
Oh, man, it was wonderful. We had the best time because, again, Elton, he'd go out of his way to make sure that things were taken care of for us. One time I saw one of the Great Brit stickers. And I said, man, what do you think I could get one of those? I want to put it on my card. He says, I don't know, maybe, you know, like one of the auto stores or something like that. The next night he comes in and he's got me one. So, I mean, you know, it's just great things like that. Plus playing with the original band with Dee Murray and Nigel Olsen. It was just the three of them. Never been to England before. All the great food, learning the language. English, one of the great stories that I remember playing there is you played in Croydon, and Mark Bolan, who did Bang a Gong, came out on stage. And he played with Elton, and Elton threw him a lead. And Elton was playing the song in F or something like that, and so Mark Bolan took off in a solo in the key of E, a half a step down. It was horrible. It was horrendous. And after the stage, I told everybody, wow, cussing sounds really funny in English.
I would imagine you've got plenty of stories like that to tell, and that's what makes your career all the more impressive. You play piano and guitar. Of course, you also do vocals as well. When it comes to piano and guitar, do you prefer one over the other? Do you have a favorite?
No, nah, it's like saying who you love most, your mommy or your daddy. I sit down and just immediately pick up on both of them. But coming to Nashville was really great for guitar because I was kind of a songwriter guitar player. Get here, people can play you under the table and make you look like you should be working for the state of Tennessee or something. So every time somebody would play something I didn't know, I'd just stop. What'd you just do? Show me. I mean, download those chords onto my guitar because my guitar did not come pre-programmed with those chords. So, you know, it's such a great thing to be able to play things like that and be able to do it by yourself if you need to.
How did you originally get your start in the music industry?
Oh, gosh, Dan and I started off together. Dan was already in a band in Texas, in Dallas, where we came from. He was actually a year ahead of me in high school, and everybody in the band was a year ahead of me, so I was the youngest guy. And they had one of their guitar players quit, And so everybody else wanted a keyboard player, but Dan wanted another guitar player. So I ended up auditioning for the job. I got the job. Dan hated me because I wasn't a guitar player like he wanted. So we did not get along at all. And then we'd be traveling, you know, to various gigs and things like that. And we found out we had kind of a natural blend. We'd sing. So we'd do Everly Brothers, Righteous Brothers, songs of that nature. And we just kind of formulated that thing. And then later on, we had a recording contract in Texas. And then we went out to Los Angeles and was able to get a recording contract out there.
Do you remember at what point you kind of figured out that you were good enough at doing this, that you could actually make a living out of it? Because I think everybody looks at being a musician in some form or fashion and they think, you know what, I could do that. When you watch a band play on TV or you see one in concert, you think to yourself, man, I could do that. But at what moment did you realize that you really could do that on a very large stage?
Well, I've got to tell you, I mean, first of all, make a living out of it. I think everybody in the music industry realizes you can't make a living playing music. You can make a killing, but you can't really make a living. And so it's just something that we never intended for being a star or anything of that nature. We were actually just trying to play, be able to keep food on the table, keep our apartments paid up, and gas in the car. So when all of these other things actually did happen, it was as big a surprise to us as everybody else. And the funny thing about it is I watch all these young kids get into it now, and they think, man, this is going to be fun, party, party, party. We're going to just get out on the road and do all these things. And you're exhausted most of the time because you're traveling all the time. And when you go home, you don't rest. You recognize you've got to get songs prepared for the next CD that you're going to do. So you're working and you're writing. And I kept waiting for those parties to come along. But by golly, I just remember an awful lot of work. And everybody that I talk to says, yep, that's my experience with it.
Yeah, sometimes resting and sleeping are way more important than partying. No question about that.
Well, we tell people, say, look, if you're going to be in the music industry, eat a lot now and sleep a lot, because when it gets going for you, you're not going to be doing either one.
John Ford Coley is performing at the Lorraine Palace Theater on Saturday, January 26th. He's joining us here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. You've done a number of different things in your career, and I was reading earlier today that you wrote and performed the Maxwell House Coffee theme with Paul Newman in Japan. How did this come about? What was that experience like?
Well, we were kind of popular in Japan, and so they asked us if we would do write a song for that. And we said, well, of course, you know, it's sure, why not? So we did it, and then I found out later on that Paul Newman was involved in the whole deal. I didn't know about it at first, but here we've got a picture of the record that we did, and it's got Paul Newman's picture on it. I thought, man, my mom is going to love me even more now that I've got a picture with me and Paul Newman. That's great. So, you know, things come your way. They sometimes you seek them out, but by and large, they just come your way.
John, you mentioned writing songs like that, jingles like that. How do those things come to you? Do you kind of have that in your mind before you sit down, or does someone say, hey, we want to take things this direction, and you say, okay, I'll put pen to paper and add some music to it?
No, actually what happened was we didn't really have anything that we were going off of at that time. They came to us with the title of Keep Your Smile, and because, again, in Japan, coffee was not an everyday drink. It's for a luxury, and so they wanted to make it and turn it into an everyday drink, and their whole thing is smiling and being happy and up and you know, just positive all the time. So this is the title they gave us, and they said, this is what we'd like. We went, okay.
Well, and you've had a lot of success, not only in the music industry. We're going to come back around to your book Backstage Pass in just a moment, but in the mid-1980s, you got into the acting world. How did you get thrust into the acting world?
Man, that was just pure fate. A friend of mine, Bo Rocco, he was the guy that played Mo Green in The Godfather. And he was the guy that got shot in the eye on the massage table at the end of the film. And Bo and I were buddies. So his son, his stepson, was wanting to be a director. So he had a film, he had a budget, he had the whole thing, and he was looking for people, and he said, I want you to play the drummer in the band. And I went, great, I've never played drums before, and I have to learn how to do it. He says, okay, we'll get you the drums, you learn how to do it. And so then Timothy B. Schmidt ended up being the bass player in the band. They pulled him in. We had people like Bo again, or Alex. Catherine Mary Stewart, just an absolute sweetheart that was out of Night of the Comet and The Last Starfighter. You know, a couple of other people. Joe Pantoliano ended up going on the Goonies and Sopranos and people like that. And so they just kind of woodshedded me away. And they had already cut the songs. I learned the songs from the top to the bottom as a drummer. Now, where the tough part came in was, like I said, I knew it from the top to the bottom. But filming is a lot different than music. So they go in and they go, okay, this is the scene. We're going to start on the second half of the second course for this shot. And I'm going, what? You know, what the hell am I doing here? I don't know what I'm doing. And so I said, play it down so I know what it is, because I'm ready to go from the very beginning of the song to the very end of the song. So, I mean, it was really fun. But getting into acting, we had some of the funniest things. Like one day, you get a lot of day players. So we had Pam Springsteen, Bruce's sister, who had 2 days worth of shooting on this film. She's supposed to be in the band, but we kicked her out. So she and I, man, we got along like brother and sister. I mean, it was just such a nice relationship. And so she was telling me how she's working really hard to be in the film industry. She wants to get out from under Bruce's shadow and make things on her own. And she's studying very hard in all the acting classes and stuff. So the next day I come in, and she runs over to me, and she goes, John, I talked to my brother Bruce about you last night. He knows who you are, and he loves your music. And he said that he would love to get together with you sometime, maybe write, maybe play, you know, get up and do something. And he said for me to give you his cell phone number. And I said, you're kidding. And she goes, and she said, yeah, I was only acting, but did you believe me?
Wow. Well, that's a heck of an experience, and I would imagine that's one of those.
After that point, we did get along like brothers and sisters, I guarantee you.
Well, she certainly got one over on you, no doubt about that. And I would imagine
she did. That's... I mean, you know, and the thing is that with acting, unlike music, because, again, you've got the same people that you're working with on, you know, for 2 months, 3 months out on the road. With acting, every other day, you got new people coming in because they've got new parts. So you're always hearing new jokes. I mean, gosh, just the multitude and volume of jokes that you get is worth the entire experience.
Well, and we mentioned that we're going to bring this back around to your book, Backstage Pass. You've got plenty of stories, and it's one thing to have the experience and the stories that you've got. It's another to be able to put them together into a book. And, you know, as often as you had been out on the road, and you still are to this day, out on the road performing, how in the world did you find time to write a book?
Well, you know, surprisingly enough, I thought when it was suggested to me, I might have had 25 pages of stories is what I thought. About 350 pages later, I'm cutting things out. Because, again, it just kept coming and coming. I mean, still to this day, things attach to me. And again, this book is not about drugs, sex, and rock and roll. It's just about all the funny, ridiculous things that would go on a daily basis. Like, one of the ones that I love to tell now is I was in Annapolis, Maryland, playing a place called the Ram's Head. And when I went up there, I mean, there's no way that you can find point A to point B in Maryland, even without a GPS. You're with or without it, you're going to get lost. So I get up to Annapolis, and there's a great big square, a big circle, and it's got a church in the middle of it. So I'm riding around this thing. My GPS quit. There's four ways to go. I've already come from one of them, but there's no street signs. And I'm going, which way? Which way? And I went around. And I must have gone around that thing 30 times. And finally, over on the right, I see a guy playing a banjo on a park bench. And I thought, a banjo? This guy's got to be local. He's got to know where this place is. So I rolled down the passenger window, rolled up to him, was going to ask him where the street was. Before I could say anything, he yelled out, Don't quit now, kid. You're in second place. So, I mean, you know, things like that happen all the time. I think, you know, I've got to include these things in the book, you know, at some point, because they just keep coming up.
Hey, any story where your GPS quits, that's a story worth telling time and time again. No doubt about that. What part of Maryland were you in where you saw someone sitting on a park bench with a banjo?
Yeah.
In Annapolis. Actually, the capital of Maryland, Annapolis, Maryland. That's where the U.S. Navy Academy is.
Wow. Okay, I was going to say, because there are some parts of Maryland where I wouldn't be too surprised to see that. I did some work in the town of Hagerstown, Maryland, many years ago, and I wouldn't be shocked to see that happen in Hagerstown.
Yeah, you might get shot there, too. You know, so.
Got to be quick on your feet, no question about that. Well, John, you're going to be performing, as we mentioned, January 26th at the Lorraine Palace Theater. Tell us what we'll see if we attend this event.
You got one of the best bands that I've ever worked with, a bunch of guys called Ambrosia. As a matter of fact, one of the guys in the band, Joe Puerta, who's the bass player, was actually one of the members of Bruce Hornsby and the Range, and he played with him on that first record. These guys had some of the best hits, Biggest Part of Me and Holding On to Yesterday and songs like that. Then we've got Peter Beckett, who was the lead singer in a group called Player, that did the song Baby Come Back. And then later on, Peter went on to play with the Little River Band over in Australia for quite a while. So he's got an amazing history himself. And then, you know, the songs that I do, we're going to see tonight. And so we all get up, Ambrosia backs everyone up. We all play together. And it's a fun evening. You're going to hear a lot of good songs in that evening. And Ambrosia, like I said, possibly one of the best bands I've ever worked with.
Very, very cool stuff. Again, John Ford Coley, he is performing Saturday, January 26th at the Lorraine Palace Theater. Make sure to check that out. John, this was a lot of fun. Thank you so much for stopping by and joining us today.
Oh, thank you for having me. I appreciate it. You got to stay warm up there, okay?
Hey, we'll see if we can make those balmy conditions a reality when you come in next weekend. How about that?
That sounds good. Sounds good.
Thank you, John. Appreciate the time.
Thank you.
Again, John Ford Coley performing Saturday, January 26th at Lorraine Palace Theater.